Welcome to the Gut Goddess Show, your weekly podcast to help you sort out your belly, your hormones, and your relationship with food. And I'm your host, Kezia Hall, holistic nutritionist and all-round health and food geek. An interesting fact about me is I am rubbish at cooking rice. I mean, like, seriously, my husband's banned me from cooking it. I'm so bad at doing it. Welcome to this next episode of the Gut Goddess Show. Hello, hello. Today, we are talking about something very exciting. And a couple of people have been asking me to talk on this, and I've been meaning to do an episode on this for ages, and it is PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I don't know about you, but I feel like I know tons of people that have PCOS. A good number of my friends do. I've had lots of clients that have it. It just seems to be on the increase and more women are having it. And ultimately, PCOS can lead to infertility. So it's a big issue. It's a big syndrome that we still don't know loads about. So I'm going to be sharing my perspective. And today, what I'm going to be sharing in this episode is my three-step process when it comes to managing PCOS and how diet can really help to support and manage individuals and women with PCOS. So I'm going to share with you my three-step process and how on really how you can support your insulin management, which I'll explain all about. So do make sure you listen up. And it's a really clear plan. Once you listen to this, you'll know really clearly the three steps that you can do to help kind of take back your body and take back your hormones and begin to heal and really, really thrive. But before we dive on into that, I want to let you know, if you haven't made use of your special discount code, so what I decided to do for the start of this year is offer everyone on my list a 50% off any of my online programs. So if you go to supernaturallyhealthy.org/discount, you can sign up there and get a one-time only 50% coupon, which I highly recommend you go over and use. And you can either grab the Green Smoothie Challenge, or the best thing if you're really looking to overhaul your diet is to join the Flourish Academy, which is an online self-study four-week program. And it's sort of a four-week reset that will really help you to ditch the sugar addiction, sort out your hormones, and beat the bloat when it comes to your belly. So and we also talk about a mindset a lot throughout the program. So it really is my signature program. And it's the four stages really that I do with every single one-to-one client. And so I highly recommend people doing that actually before they ever work with me. It can really help. If people can do that, those 4 weeks, those four stages, then if we do work together on a one-to-one basis, we can hit the ground running. So if you haven't gotten that discount, make sure you go over and head there now. And if you haven't left me a review yet, then that would be lovely. I'd love to hear from you. You can do that on iTunes. Otherwise, get a pen and paper out. I do get a bit geeky. I do get a bit in depth, but I do share with you a really clear three-step plan to help you create a diet that's really supportive of healing from PCOS. So enjoy. Today we're talking about PCOS. Now, this is something that a good number of you have asked me about either on Instagram or Facebook. And it's something I come across a lot when I'm working with people on a one-to-one basis. So this is kind of probably going to be part one because it's a relatively complex sort of syndrome. So PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. PCOS for short is how I'll refer to it. So what we're going to look at today is I'm going to give you a quick glimpse of what it is. And then we're going to look at a couple of kind of diagnostic criteria, and then I'm going to look at what you can do about it. So today we're specifically going to do a quick focus and begin to look at how your diet can support this if you either suspect you have it or you have an official diagnosis of PCOS. So that is what we're going to be looking at today. And obviously, just to let you know, I'm a holistic nutritionist. I'm not an endocrinologist or a consultant on hormones. So this is really coming from a nutritionist perspective, a holistic perspective, and from my kind of training in nutrition and in functional medicine But obviously, I am not a doctor. So if you do have PCOS, it's really important that this whole journey, any changes that you make, you do it alongside your kind of consultant endocrinologist that you have assigned to you in your case. And that you also do make sure you go through the normal channels of diagnosis just to make sure that this is really what you're dealing with. So, polycystic ovarian syndrome, what is it? It's basically a metabolic syndrome with hormonal imbalances alongside it. So it's also worth pointing out that it's a syndrome. So a bit like irritable bowel syndrome, it's a set of symptoms that all sort of get lumped together and called a syndrome as opposed to a disease. So often around syndromes that we have, a bit like IBS, it's helpful to think about, often it's not 100% clear what is going on. And that is definitely the case with PCOS. So with PCOS, there's still lots about it that we still don't understand. We still don't fully get every single, reason why people would get PCOS. And so there's still a lot of mystery around it. There's lots of sort of contradictory approaches and schools of thought. So this is going to be, I'm probably going to be coming at it from obviously my perspective and more of a sort of functional medicine perspective. But it is important to think about things when things are syndromes, that anything that is called a syndrome basically means there is kind of still a lot of investigation going on and still a lot of things that are known. And often, a bit like IBS, it can be a sort of diagnosis of exclusion. So with IBS, you will often get that diagnosis by a doctor once they've excluded things like Crohn's, any irritable bowel diseases, which would be things like colitis, diverticulitis, which I can never say properly, Crohn's disease, you know, all of these kinds of things. Once they've excluded that as going on in your body, then you might end up with an IBS diagnosis. And the diagnosis of PCOS can often be similar, although often a lot of the time they'll do things like ultrasounds to see if there is any sort of cysts or what people assume are cysts on the ovaries. And that's often one of the diagnostic criteria. But there's also things like missing periods or irregular periods, elevated levels of androgens, which are more your male hormones. So like DHEA, testosterone, those kind of hormones in the body. And there's actually a whole range of diagnostic criteria. So it's possible for you to be diagnosed with PCOS and have PCOS without actually them finding anything on the ultrasound, without them finding any cysts on your ovaries. And it's also possible for you to have cysts on your ovaries and not to have PCOS. It's not. We often think, oh, well, if only I have cysts on my ovaries, that must mean I have PCOS. It's not quite as clear cut as that. So just to make you aware of what that is. But what actually is it? What do we mean by a metabolic, metabolic syndrome with hormone imbalances? It's a lot. What does that actually mean? Well, there's loads and loads of research now and we know quite clearly that PCOS is really related to something called insulin resistance. So you probably heard of the hormone insulin. If you think about diabetics, and that's often, what some diabetics might be injecting themselves with. It's the hormone that helps to regulate the kind of glucose in our blood. So if you think about how much sugar is in our blood, insulin is the hormone that regulates how much of sugar is in our blood at any one time to make sure there's not too much and there's not too little. Because the body, in so many areas, when it comes to insulin, when it comes to sex hormones, when it comes to so many things and vitamins and nutrients, the body's a lot like Goldilocks. Goldilocks is like, this bowl of porridge is too big, this bowl of porridge is too small. The body is very much like, it doesn't want too much of something and it doesn't want too little of something. Both can be problematic, which is why it's really dangerous. Maybe you read about the vitamin B12 and you just think, oh, I'm just going to take loads of B12 supplement, vitamin B12, because obviously more is better. That is not the case with the body really in any respect, apart from maybe with green vegetables. The more green vegetables you eat, the better. That's probably the only instance. But it's really important that we recognize that the body tends to work a bit like Goldilocks, not too much, not too little, just the right amount. And everyone's just the right amount. Just everyone's amount is slightly different, which is why it can get a little bit confusing for everyone. So a metabolic syndrome is really what we're talking about here, is that there's issues with insulin. And so a little brief explanation of what insulin does. So insulin is, as I mentioned, a hormone that helps to manage the sugar in our blood, because if we get too much or too little sugar, then that can lead in our blood system, then that can lead to seizures and all sorts of really serious issues, which is why diabetes as a disease is so serious, because there's that poor management or the body's inability to produce insulin depending on whether you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. So insulin, if you have excess or high amounts of insulin circulating in the body, what can happen is that you can reduce a substance called sex hormone binding globulin, which is SHBG for short. And often if you're getting your hormones tested and things, and this might be tested at the doctors in the blood panel. So if you ever see SHBG, then that might be a marker that you might recognize on your tests. If you have high amounts of insulin circling around in your bloodstream and you've got tons of insulin going around because there's maybe lots of glucose in your blood, lots of sugar going on in your blood, then what you will do is you'll actually suppress and reduce the amount of this sex hormone binding globulin. And this hormone kind of does what it says on the tin. It binds to sex hormones, and it binds to things like testosterone and to estrogen, and actually makes them unavailable in the body. So if you imagine you've got tons of testosterone going around your body, because women have testosterone as like men do, it's just men have slightly more. And what the sex hormone binding globulin does, it binds to these hormones and kind of makes them inactive. It sort of turns them off or makes them unavailable or unuseful in the body, so that then the body can manage and regulate how many hormones it's got going on at one time. So if you imagine you've got a lot of insulin circulating, you're going to be reducing this SHBG substance, which will mean you'll have more hormones like testosterone, more of your androgen hormones circulating around the body, as well as estrogen, which isn't an androgen hormone as far as I'm aware, and having that circulating around the body, which means actually can lead to real severe hormonal imbalance. And that's a really basic look at it. It's a lot more complicated than that, but from a really basic perspective, that's why you might be thinking, what has insulin got to do with my ovaries? Like, we don't often think about them coming together, but that is what's happening. An excess of insulin hormone circulating in the blood will suppress the production of the sex hormone binding globulin. And what then happens is that you then get an excess of these androgens, so these male hormones going around the body. And that's one of the diagnostic criteria of PCOS is, okay, what is the test, like how much testosterone or DHEA is going around the body? Because that obviously, if you have too much of a certain hormone, you know, thinking about the Goldilocks perspective, then actually that can have serious ramifications in the body and affect ovulation and fertility. Because another diagnostic aspect of PCOS is no ovulation or really irregular ovulation. So if you just never have your period, then you're obviously never ovulating, which means ovulation is when your body would mature an egg that is kept in your ovaries. Ovulation is when that gets released and placed into kind of the journey along the fallopian tubes and the body hoping that at some point it will be fertilized. But ovulation is that process of releasing the egg and releasing a mature egg, which happens prior to ovulation, releasing that kind of into your fallopian tubes. And it's hoping for a sperm to find it. That's the whole point. But if you're not ovulating, if you're not releasing an egg, if you're not able to, or you're not releasing a mature egg, then that is why you wouldn't be necessarily getting your periods. Or also, if you just get really irregular periods, you maybe get a period every 60 days, sometimes 90 days, sometimes it's regular, sometimes you wait a year and it disappears. You know, that can also be a sign of PCOS, because the body is maybe sometimes ovulating and sometimes it's not. And actually what a healthy female body is, a kind of pre-menopause, is in a regular cycle. We are cyclical beings, and a healthy body is actually, whether you want to have a baby or not, is fertile. It doesn't matter if you want to make a baby, but A healthy female body is actually a fertile female body. That's a sign of vibrancy and health. And what you choose to do with that fertility is your choice. So we've looked a little bit about what PCOS is. It's a really common disorder. So, I mean, I can just think from my friends, I probably know 3 or 4 just of my friends that have PCOS. From my clients, I was going to say probably a good 20% of the clients I've worked with have PCOS. And it feels like it's getting more and more common and ramping up even more. And there's lots of different factors to that, which we'll talk from. But just to summarize, it's a hormonal, PCOS is a hormonal imbalance, but it's also a metabolic issue in the body because of this close relationship with insulin. Now, there is also many other factors that can contribute to it. So there's research going on and some thought that there's certain genetic predispositions that can make people more likely to have this. There's environmental toxins. There's obviously nutrition and nutrients that plays a role. Stress plays a really big role because stress often can impact the levels of insulin in the body, and cortisol, your stress hormones, things like cortisol and adrenaline impact your insulin kind of mechanisms in the body. So you can see this isn't, you know, as with lots of things in the body, there's multiple contributing factors that can lead to this. So it's not just genetics. It's not just, oh, I have this gene, therefore I'll have to have PCOS. You might have a gene, then you might also have some environmental factors, you know, growing up with a poor diet, you might be eating tons of sugar and lots of caffeine. And then you might have a really, you know, you might be burning the candle on both ends, really stressful. And then you're maybe not eating enough calories, you know, because you're trying to lose weight. And so you're trying to hardly eat anything. And that all together can create a bit of a hot mess and a bit of a hot storm that could contribute to this PCOS, this syndrome, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So, and then we've also looked at how this excess, so a rise of insulin in the body affects this hormone called your sex hormone binding globulin. And it also can stimulate different ovarian enzymes that I won't go into because they've got really long, complicated names that can also, again, contribute to increase of testosterone. So basically what we're talking about is an excess or an increase of these androgen, these male hormones, but also estrogen, excess estrogen can also play a role, or estrogen dominance can play a role in this. And we're also looking at this metabolic syndrome, which is your insulin levels. Whew. So that may be, I hope that's not too much of a mind bender for you, but I do, it's really helpful, I think, sometimes when we can understand some of the basics of how these things are working in our body, because otherwise we can be like, oh, I have PCOS, I have cysts on my ovaries, that's causing the problems. You might have PCOS and you might not have cysts on your ovaries, and actually it's more about this hormonal imbalance and this metabolic issue that's going on that's kind of contributing to this hot mess that is PCOS. So in terms of diagnosis, so it's a syndrome, so there can be lots of, it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So if you're going to your doctor, they'll really want to be looking to exclude other hormonal and endocrine disruptions within the body and endocrine diseases. And then once they've done that, and if you meet a couple of the kind of diagnosis criteria, then you'll probably be given this PCOS label, and then you might be offered an ultrasound of the ovaries. But it's not, as I said before, it's not just whether you have cysts on the ovaries, it's also around irregular periods or non-existent periods, so a lack of ovulation. It can also be around excess male, these male hormones in the body. Typically, but not in every case, it can come with excess weight. Again, that's linked with this insulin component, and metabolic issue often comes with kind of obesity and excess weight, especially around the middle and the belly. It can sometimes come with things like depression and anxiety, libido issues. There also can be gut health problems. You know, there's a wide range of symptoms that go with this syndrome. And again, if you suspect this is happening, it is really important that you go to a doctor and you go through that process with them in terms of getting an official diagnosis. This isn't something that you just want to self-diagnose. It's something you actually want to go through, get a good diagnosis, and then you can make an awesome plan of action, which is what I like to do with people and support them with their conventional medicine. And a lot of the time it's worth saying, if you do have that diagnosis, you might be offered certain medications like metformin to help with that insulin resistance. Often you will be recommended to go on the contraceptive pill to help. Often people think it can kind of help kickstart ovulation. And so some people might, and that can be the case for some women, they go on the contraceptive pill for a period of time. And then when they come off, their kind of periods get kickstarted. But sometimes the contraceptive pill, we know from research, can also lead to infertility. So you kind of playing with fire a little bit there. Anyway, I'll do another podcast on my views of the pill. As you can tell, I'm not a big fan. Generally, there's definitely use for it and definitely circumstances, but I think, anyway, I'll not go into that just now. I'll save that for another episode. So that's a little bit of what PCOS is, a little bit of what the diagnostic criteria is. But basically, in terms of symptoms, you're looking at irregular periods, no periods. You're looking at potentially excess weight, especially around the middle, but maybe not. It's not to say slim people or skinny people, they can also have PCOS. You might have cysts on your ovaries. Again, you might not. There might be things like anxiety and depression going on. There might not. There often will be low libido, because ovulation is that time of the month when actually our libido, our sex drive really peaks, because we're fertile. So that's how that cycle works in the body. So often, you know, sex drive can be pretty low. Often also these excess of male hormones in the body can lead to unwanted hair growth. So facial hair, maybe excess hair on the chest or around the nipples, or just an excess of hair in places that you maybe haven't normally had it. So often it is facial, chest, maybe back, but I've not known many people that have to have it around their back. So because of this, excess of male hormones can lead to more excessive hair growth. Also at extreme levels, it can mean in some women that they lose hair as well. So they might start to feel like they're having what's that called? Alopecia. Is that how you say it? You know, there can be a lot of hair loss. Also, sometimes it can impact your adrenals, and thyroid problems can contribute. So you can see it's a relatively complex, widespread thing. And it is a syndrome, and a bit like IBS, there's a lot we don't know about it. But I hope that gives you a little bit more information of what it is, what the symptoms might be. And so now what I want to do is look at what the heck you can do about it. Because you might be like, I have PCOS. Yeah, I've just listened to this, Kezia. Now I'm just like super depressed because I've got like male hormones going around in my body and I'm not ovulated and my sex drive's rubbish. And I'm like 3 stone overweight and it's all belly weight and great, thanks, great. But there is hope. I've had several clients that have had a PCOS diagnosis, and through a lot of hard work that they've done and a lot of dedication and commitment to their health and to dietary changes, they have managed to get their periods back, make babies, sort out, lose weight, and actually start to really sync up again with that cyclical female experience, which is a healthy female has a regular cycle and is fertile whether or not they want to have babies. And obviously then we get into premenopause and menopause, and that's a different, you know, that's when we stop this kind of as much being as cyclical beings. But for most females in premenopause, we want to have this healthy cycle, and that's a sign of fertility. So what can you do about it? Well, the first thing is looking at this insulin component. Now, what I talked about is kind of having excess insulin in the body, and that can sometimes be known as insulin resistance. And insulin resistance, or sometimes it gets called insulin resistance syndrome or metabolic syndrome or syndrome X, or there's lots of different names for it, is actually linked to loads of different diseases. So obviously diabetes, you know, we know that connection, but there's also links to it with Alzheimer's, cancer, other dementias, other neurological issues, tons of different things. So actually, whether or not you have PCOS, really making sure you manage and you look after this insulin management in the body is one of the best things that you could ever do for your health. It is one of the best ways of preventing future disease, of reducing your risk of a lot of these awful diseases that are on the increase. Managing and looking after your insulin or your blood sugar, that's often what it gets called, is one of the most important things you can ever do for your health. It's not the only thing, but it is one of the most important things. And when in the case of PCOS, it is really, really important. And that's why often people with PCOS do get prescribed things like metformin, which is to help with this insulin resistant component, as far as I'm aware. Again, not a pharmacist either. So what you can do is help manage this insulin. And how can you do that? Well, it is actually surprisingly simple. To really look after this insulin management in the body, we don't want to be eating lots of sugar-forming foods. So for PCOS, if you came to me as a client and you're like, oh, I've been diagnosed with PCOS, my periods are all over the place. You know, maybe you don't want to have a baby straight away, but you know, in 5-10 years, maybe you do want to get preggers, and you know at the moment you're not fertile, you maybe got excess weight, you may be a bit depressed or anxious, you maybe got hair growth over the place, or your libido's in the toilet and you're just not interested in having sex, which by the way isn't healthy either. It's healthy to have a healthy sex drive is a sign of health. And so just being like, ugh, not bothered, actually means it's potentially a hormonal imbalance, whether or not it's PCOS, just to put that out there. Should probably do another episode on libido, shouldn't I? Because that would be fun. I love talking about sex. So really want to be looking at how can we manage our diet and reduce the amount of sugar-forming foods in the body. So what I mean by sugar-forming foods, they are carbohydrates and sugar. So obviously you'll probably think of your classic sugars, your fizzy drinks, your chocolate bars, your sugar in your tea, those kind of things. Yeah, they are sugar-forming foods, but so are carbohydrates, whether it's refined or whole grain. So are fruits. So are all of these different things. So with PCOS, one of the best things that you can do, and any person that's wanting to manage their insulin level, is to actually really look at, first of all, stage one, reducing and removing refined sugar from your diet completely. You just want to bite the bullet and get rid of it. And it's honestly much easier than you think. If you need help with it, you can join the Flourish Academy, which is a holistic program, but it looks at doing a bit of a sugar detox as well as looking at hormones and gut health. It is honestly, the thought of ditching sugar is much worse than actually ditching it. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not like a walk in the park, but actually removing sugar from your diet is one of the best things that you can do for your health, not just for your hormones, not just for your weight, but for your mental health, for your gut health, for your neurological health, or for your skin, for so many things, for your energy. So number one, stage one, is you want to reduce gradually and then completely remove refined sugars. So you don't want syrups in your coffee, sugar in your tea. You don't want to be grabbing that muffin from Starbucks as a breakfast. You don't want to be having that sugary cereal, those granola bars. You don't want to be even eating tons of things, even with healthy sugars. But stage one is removing the refined sugars. Then stage two is you really want to look at really reducing your natural sugars. So I often get people to do it in this way when it comes to sugar, is first of all, focus on removing the refined sugars. So if you drink Coke or even Diet Coke, so artificial sweeteners are also really problematic for insulin management. They actually can make, can really cause problems with our insulin management, even though there's no sugar. So if you're drinking a lot of Diet Coke or diet drinks, just as bad as their full sugar version. So you first want to focus on that. Once you've got that sorted, you then want to look at natural sugars. So what I often get people to do is to replace the refined sugar with natural alternatives to begin with. So if you're a Diet Coke fan, you might want to switch to water kefir or kombucha, or, you know, fizzy water with some pomegranate juice in that's still got sugars in, but it's more of that natural alternative. That's stage one. Then stage two, you want to look at reducing even the natural sugars in your diet. So you don't want to be eating 5, 6, 7 portions of fruit a day. You don't want to be drinking fruit-only smoothies. You don't want to be eating tons and tons of Naked bars and tons of dates and tons of homemade brownies with coconut sugar in every day. You want to be maybe limiting that to, I often say, between 1 to 2 servings of sweet food a day. So 1 to 2 servings of naturally sweet food. So 1 to 2 servings of fruit, or 1 to 2 servings. So that might be you put a banana in your smoothie in the morning, and then maybe in the afternoon you might have a Naked bar or a couple of dates with walnuts, and then that's it. Those are your sweet tasting foods of the day. So that's stage two. And often for a lot of people, that can be enough. that once they've removed the refined sugars and they have managed and found their kind of happy place with natural sweetness, so with naturally sweet foods, which are fruits and dates and honey and coconut sugars, you know, these more natural, unrefined alternatives, that often doing those two stages can be enough for people. But for a lot of people, if their PCOS is still not responding and improving, or they're still not losing weight on that, what you want to do is go to stage three, which is then looking at the amount of carbohydrate, the overall carbohydrate in the body. So this can get a bit confusing because fruit has carbohydrate in, dates have carbohydrate in, a lot of, you know, just as white bread has carbohydrates. So carbohydrate basically breaks down in the body as sugar. So if you're just having honey, then that is a carbohydrate, but that's a much more of a quick release sugar in the body. Whereas with carbohydrate, especially if you're maybe having whole grain pasta, that might take a little bit longer to get broken down into sugar in the body, but the end result is still glucose in the blood, is still sugar in the blood. So stage three is really looking at creating a lower carb diet. So there's a lot of research around PCOS and a low carb, higher fat diet, and this being really, really effective, or what's also sometimes known as a ketogenic diet. But you don't necessarily need to dive into a ketogenic diet if you have PCOS. You can actually just begin. This is how I recommend people do it. Number one, reducing refined sugar. Number two, managing your natural sugars in the day, so to 1 to 2 portions of naturally sweet tasting food, and then looking at lowering the carbohydrates. So a really helpful structure that I find that I use with clients, and to be honest, I use with myself. I don't have PCOS, but Alzheimer's runs in my family, and I want to do as much as I can to prevent that. And Alzheimer's is really, really linked, to insulin resistance in the brain. It's often known as type 3 diabetes, as we kind of have done more and more research into it. So I often use this structure where I think about breakfast as being a low or no carbohydrate meal, meaning breakfast is focused on protein, fats, fiber, and vegetables. So I had poached eggs with some spinach and mushroom and one gluten-free sausage. That was my breakfast today. And then lunch, also you think about having a lower carbohydrate diet. So stage three of really helping to manage your insulin management, really helping to reduce those male hormones, those androgens in the body, which we do by reducing the amount of insulin hormones circulating around in the body, is we want to really focus on eating a lower carbohydrate diet. Now that doesn't mean no carbohydrates, but lower. And I often find if women start by having no carbohydrates for breakfast, or really low, like vegetables have carbohydrates in, spinach has carbohydrates in, the carbohydrates in vegetables, I don't really have a problem with. So starting by having low carbohydrate at breakfast and low carbohydrate at lunch, then actually that can be a really helpful structure. And then at dinner time, you might have your brown rice or some sweet potato or normal potato. And that in itself can be really, really helpful structure. So you might want to listen back to this and write this down. And it's worth knowing, if you don't have PCOS, this can be a really helpful structure and way of helping you lose weight. If you have weight that's not moving, no matter how much you run, no matter how little you eat, which, by the way, eating less is rarely the answer. It really, really is. And often can contribute to things like PCOS, is if someone has chronically under-eaten for years and years and years, that is stressful to the body, it causes nutrient depletions and can lead to massive hormonal imbalances. So this structure, this three-stage structure, can be really helpful if you're just wanting to lose weight, if you're looking to prevent future illness, if you feel like you have excess body fat, if you're really wanting to support your fertility, this three-stage process is really helpful. So when it comes to supporting PCOS and insulin management, as well as a whole host of other health issues, first of all, I'm just going to recap. You want to remove the refined sugars. Do that gradually, get that down, do that first. Don't do all three of these in 1 week. Do it one step at a time and build on each step. So do one thing, then once you've got that down, introduce stage two, then introduce stage three. So stage one, remove refined sugars. Stage two is reduce naturally sweet foods. So your naturally sweet foods like fruit and honey and dates to 1 to 2 portions a day. Then stage three is begin a lower carbohydrate diet. And the easiest way to do that is to have low or minimal carbohydrates for breakfast and lunch, and then enjoy carbohydrates at dinner. And if you do those three things, honestly, you will see a massive difference, not just in your cycle, but also in your mood, in your energy levels, in your weight, in all of these different things. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, I have PCOS, Kezia, but I don't need to lose weight, I'm actually really slim, then it's okay. This, if you eat enough calories, you won't lose weight doing this. You actually want to make sure that while you're eating less carbohydrate, you're eating plenty of fat. So I had a client who we'll call Sarah. That wasn't her name. She came to me and had historically had issues and a disordered approach with eating, and so had lost a lot of weight. And that wasn't active while she came to me. I don't work with people if they are still in their eating disorder and still processing through that. But she'd worked with a dietitian. She'd gone through all the general, the medical approaches to that. But she also had loads of gut health issues, was bloated all the time, hadn't had a period for years, you know, was engaged, looking to get married and hoping at some point in the future to have a baby. And so what we did with her was this very thing. We removed and reduced the refined sugars, which we did carefully because there was that history of disordered eating. So you want to be really careful when you talk about removing or limiting foods with people that have that as a history. So we really focused with her on adding in lots of food because she also needed to gain weight. That was also another thing we were working on together, was making sure she put on good amounts of weight. So we focused on adding in loads of healthy fats, loads of healthy proteins, loads of switching the refined sugars to natural sweeteners. So things like dates and naked bars. And we focused on adding in lots of healthy protein, healthy fats. So she was happy to eat meat. So she ate meat and fish, lots of avocados, coconut oil, olive oil, lots of nuts, lots of seeds. We worked on her gut health, which really, really helped. And we'll talk about that in another episode around PCOS and gut health. And she slowly put on weight. Her gut got a lot better and a lot happier. She slowly started to get, you know, irregular periods again. And then it became a lot more regular. And now she's had a baby, which is awesome. So this is possible. And I know classically we think of PCOS as people being obese or overweight. But even if you're not, then this can play a role. But I've also had clients that have come and are more classical PCOS case that are very overweight, maybe 3 or 4 stone heavier than they would like to be. And they have this PCOS symptoms. And actually doing this three-step process around managing their insulin has massively helped them to lose weight, as well as feel less depressed and have better energy and support their cycle. Now, diet alone is not the only thing that you can do. So in future episodes, we'll look at different supplements and we'll look at different components and different lifestyle factors that I'll do. So think of this as part one. If you have any questions around this, then do let me know. But if you do have PCOS, then beginning with this three-step process, I think is one of the best places to start. So if you have any questions, let me know over at supernaturallyhealthy.org. If you want help with reducing your sugar and managing that properly, then make sure you join the Flourish Academy, which if you haven't joined my email list yet, you can get 50% off that. If you go to supernaturallyhealthy.org/discount, you'll get a coupon code that you can use for your first transaction on my website that gives you 50% off anything. But if you're really looking to reduce your sugar and manage PCOS, then joining the Flourish Academy is probably one of the best things you can do. It's not a specific PCOS program, but it will really, really help with this three-stage process that I've talked about, because it has all the sugar-free recipes and is very, it's focused on lots of fat, protein, vegetables, and fiber, which will really help support your insulin management. So I hope that's been helpful. I hope that's not been too geeky. I've tried and not too all over the place. But know that if you do have PCOS, there is hope for you. It's not, you don't just have to be lumped with it, because ultimately PCOS can lead to infertility and that can be heartbreaking. But I've seen time and time again, people have had this diagnosis, they have managed their diet, they have figured out the root cause, and they have ended up having healthy babies, healthy cycles and feeling really, really good. So just because you get diagnosed with something doesn't mean you're stuck with it for the rest of your life. Your body loves to heal and loves to balance itself out. So I hope that has been helpful. Let me know any questions you have. Head to supernaturallyhealthy.org/discount if you haven't made use of your discount code yet. And if you have PCOS and you know you want more one-to-one support, then head to my website and click on the one-to-one coaching and consultations, and we can see if that's a good fit. I do take on a limited number of clients, but we could have a session and see how I can help you out and make a plan of action. Otherwise, know that you're awesome. Know that your body can heal and rebalance, and I'll see you next week for another episode. Lots of love. Bye.